They're looking for community. They're looking for social events. They're looking for opportunities to go and get new experiences. And that's really a very new product for our space. That's been growing rapidly.
Welcome to season 8 of Bridge the Gap, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. The BTG Network is powered by sponsors
Align, NICMAP,
ProCare HR, Sage, Hamilton Captel, ServiceMaster, The Bridge Group Construction, and Salinity, and produced by Salinity Marketing.
Bridge the Gap in 3, 2. Welcome to Bridge the Gap Podcast, this senior living podcast with Josh and Lucas. A beautiful day here in beautiful Fort Lauderdale at the FSLA conference. We got a great returning guest, our good friend, Kyle Gardner. Nick Mapp, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be with you guys. And thanks for having me again. It's always fun to be here.
It's fun because our listeners know when Kyle or Eric come on, they're about to get some data. They're about to get some of the latest trends and information that people pay a lot of money for. And Kyle comes on here and gives it to us all for free. And so with that said, Kyle, give us a download and we'll dive into a conversation about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we just released our 2Q data, looking at trends in supply, demand, construction for private pay seniors and for nursing care as well. And fortunately, the story continues to be overwhelmingly positive from a demand standpoint. Occupancy grew about 80 basis points in a single quarter. So we're up to 88.1% in primary markets, which is just wonderful. We're basically back to pre-pandemic levels and past some markets are well past that pre-pandemic mark, driven all by absorption. We have had multiple quarters in a row now of absorption just accelerating. And especially, you know, we just released the 2Q data, but going back to Q1, Q1 2025 was the biggest Q1 in the last like 10 or 12 years from a demand standpoint. And so that's the, you know, the early part of the baby boom, right? Like technically the baby boomers will turn 80 in 2026, 2027, but the kind of the demographic wave of American families having children started in like 1942 to 1945 with kind of, I guess that's the end of what the silent generation. So they've been entering our market, you know, buying our product. Independent living is accelerating a lot faster than AL, I would say. We're in like the 89, 90% occupancy there in the primary markets, which is awesome. So that product seems to be flourishing and it kind of makes sense. The younger, more mobile, more social resident is moving into that. And then assisted living is kind of right behind it as a standalone. I think that's majority AL is in that 86 to 87% range.
Kyle, so something maybe you could do for our listeners. I'm sure we've got on this podcast a lot of new listeners as we do each time. And people are still learning what you guys do at NICMAP. And when they hear terms like independent living, they're learning about our industry. And I think assisted living and memory care is pretty easy to wrap your arms around, but independent living can kind of be this gray zone. So when you say independent living, how does NICMAP define that? So the data that you're collecting, is that a broad range of all types of independent living, or do you put sort of some rails around how you define that?
I'm going to answer your question by zooming out even further and just kind of talking about all the care types we track. For us, we really focus on private pay senior housing, and then we do monitor a little bit of the more like government reimbursed stuff with skilled nursing, nursing care. The spectrum of data and communities that we cover starts at active adult rentals specifically. We don't really track active adult homes for sale or things of that nature. We look purely at the rental play. So a 55 plus active adult community is essentially a lifestyle multifamily property that has a lot of services and community style amenities where the senior does not need like day-to-day healthcare, even maybe week-to-week healthcare. They're looking for a community. They're looking for social events. They're looking for opportunities to go and get new experiences. And that's really a very new product for our space. That's been growing rapidly. Active adult is kind of the new independent living in a way. So maybe 20 years ago, independent living was the entry point for our industry. where you had seniors more established in their 70s. Maybe they had a couple of healthcare issues that they needed, you know, to have monitored every once in a while, but they were largely mobile and looking for community, but they couldn't live at home or they didn't want to live at home anymore. And so for independent living, it's a relatively broad product across the country. That the way we kind of define that is a rental community where meals are included. You're on a campus or in a property of maybe a standalone building or sometimes a campus environment, and specific amenities are offered. A primary one is meals are included. So if you kind of look at active adult and IL, the main difference is kind of the meals and the amenities.
Yeah.
And then as you move up, obviously care becomes the differentiating factor and maybe building design, right? So an assisted living and an IL building, they could look identical, but it's the type of care being provided. The staff mix starts to change pretty drastically. And then when you get to memory care and skilled nursing, again, the building design is going to change more, be more care centric, have different room presence and a very different staffing mix for a nursing care versus an IL property.
Well, thank you for kind of clarifying and defining that. So a very positive story is what the numbers are telling us, is what the data is telling us. And you feel that, right, Lucas? I mean, we're going to these events, we're talking to operators. The operators are much more positive. Occupancies are going up. You would think that is a story that's being told not only in our industry, but outside of our industry. I don't know if you're sensing this or seeing this in any kind of numbers, but it seems like a lot of new investment, new capital that has never been in senior housing before is emerging. Are you seeing that same kind of trend with mergers and acquisitions?
Transaction volume is definitely picking up. Prices are rising. I think we've seen four quarters in a row of prices increase. So acquisition activity is definitely back, maybe not to peak levels that we saw at certain periods, but compared to kind of long-term trends, transaction volume is largely back. And I hear anecdotes at events like you guys do. People are, they're evaluating deals, they're closing deals, they're excited about that, but that's largely on the acquisition side. To talk about kind of new entrants, we're definitely seeing a lot more people explore the industry, maybe do a little window shopping if they're not ready to commit capital or they're in that early stage of kind of building the business case for it. People are reaching out to us. More people are coming to NIC conferences. The growth conference we had earlier this year was really successful, both on the operator front and the capital front, which I think is good for the industry overall. You have the same long-term players, you know, the name brands. I think we can all, you know, if when I say that, something comes to mind for you. And yes, they're still here. They're not going anywhere. But also companies that have predominantly been in an adjacent sector, in a multifamily space or at a family office who's done deals here and there, they're looking at seniors as a great opportunity for the next 20 to 30 years.
Something that's very puzzling to me, maybe you can give us some data and insight. With the positive story, we know we've heard you say that the supply demand, I mean, it's just askew. So the demand continues to grow.
Yeah.
But it seems like the deficit of the supply continues to grow as well. So what are you seeing with new construction, right? We know that there's a lot of renovation happening where we know occupancy is going up. So how is that favorability impacting new development, new construction projects coming out of the ground?
Unfortunately, it is not a fun story on that part of the industry. So in second quarter, we had the lowest number of new units open ever on record, less than 1,000 units opened in that period. So in terms of like the metric we track is kind of new units or kind of construction over inventory. And it was below 1% for the first time on our record.
Across all sectors?
Like that's kind of the aggregate senior housing. So that wouldn't include nursing care. Well, like nursing care, I think is well known that inventory has been on the decline. That's more affected by kind of government reimbursement rates and other regulations. But in the private pay space, you know, 2010 to 2020, we saw development outpace population growth pretty dramatically and consistently for a full decade. And that put pressures on the space, but we were all preparing for what's happening now. And then through a mix of tight banking regulations, tight capital markets, people feeling, certain investors feeling like the performance from COVID was just too much to like go right back into new development mode. So they're maybe slower to take risks in certain areas, or they'd prefer to take risks through acquisition. So we're seeing maybe more of a hesitancy in some cases to do new development, but I think by and large, people want to do it though. It's more of getting the deals done. I know you guys do development. You talk to a ton of investors, you're doing renovations and things of that nature. Like, are you feeling that people are moving away from this type of work, or do you think it's more there's a barrier to progress? I'm curious to get your take. I know I'm flipping the script on you a little bit.
From my limited perspective, and we're going to have a lot of folks on the podcast that I hope to, we can ask that question too, that are very experienced developers and operators. But I mean, I don't think it's any one thing that I'm hearing. Obviously, construction costs are still really difficult to make a deal pencil, right? Yeah. So there's that. I also think probably one factor that's probably harder to quantify is the fact that I think there's a lot of talk about the product or the housing type that has traditionally been built and filled and operated by our industry. Very much there's a different set of wants, preferences from the next generation. And while we are speculative, we're not for sure what that housing model is, and we're not exactly for sure what those service delivery types are and what, candidly, what the cost and how the market's going to receive that. So there's sort of this speculative group of seniors that are emerging into our space, and there's not necessarily a proven model that we know works, right? So I think anytime you do something that's for the first time,
yeah,
you're sort of pioneering into this boomer generation. And so I think people are not only less willing to just write checks for the investment, but they're waiting to see models emerging that have a proven stabilization record, right?
Yeah.
So show me where you've done this before. And a developer saying, well, I've done these type before. This is a little bit different. It's a new pro forma. And so anytime you can even find an investor that's willing to take that speculative risk and invest, I think the cost of that is higher, which makes it even more difficult for the deal to pencil. So I think there's a little bit of that. And to your earlier point, people have memories. People remember a lot of developers out there that were like, hey, the demographic's coming. Let's jump on after the Great Recession, this development boom.
Yep.
And they put out all this product and probably delivered the product, too much product to a market at the same time. And you had lower stabilization, higher cash burn, and people got burnt from the space. They talk, right?
Yep.
And so there's probably some of that as well. So that I don't know. Lucas, what do you think?
So I have a different take on a little bit different lane, right? Is the renovation track, which is my bailiwick. That's what I do personally for my day job every day. Working with the biggest REITs all the way down to, you mentioned family office, just these kind of smaller, maybe they've got a portfolio of 5 to 10 buildings and they're looking to expand and grow. And personally, those are some of my favorite people to work with because they're excited, they're aggressive, they're ready to make decisions, and they really value what I bring to the table there. To your point about mergers and acquisitions, that's really where I come in the most on. And I see that transaction volume really taking place where the inventory is old, so to speak. These buildings are legacy buildings, circa 1990s, maybe early 2000s, and have had very little love over the years. Maybe they've changed some carpet out,
yeah, you know, just kind of basics,
very basics. And those are perfect value add deals where the building maybe has some reputation problems due to the operations or staffing issues, and then the physical plant, and then just the way it looks, it needs an update. And I really enjoy that part of the turnaround. and get to see them get from that initial investment to that 88% occupancy, 90% occupancy when, you know, that building was struggling probably in the 60s or 70s. And I'm seeing that. And it's because nothing is coming out of the ground, so to speak. And so these investors, their options are value add acquisitions. And I see a lot of that.
Yeah. And the data shows too, I think part of the reason we're seeing transaction prices increase and volumes increase is the cost to do new development in a secondary or tertiary market might be $400 a door or something like that. In a tier one market, it might be $700 or $800 a door for a really premium product. But the price per unit we're seeing on transactions, mostly in like the value add space, I would say is $150 to $250 a door. You know, again, depending on the age and the size of the asset, it's a lot easier for someone to dip their toe in at kind of that price, put some capital, CapEx into the project, like refresh it, knowing the demand is right there, right, for certain markets, versus, to your point, developers kind of playing the 4 to 5 year game, maybe longer in a tier one metro, where you are kind of betting on the next component, the next senior to come in. And there has been so much change in the industry with care service delivery, with new innovations in healthcare. We've got the new big beautiful bill that's going to bring changes to Medicare and Medicaid, which, while does not directly affect private pay seniors, it will kind of have ripple effects around us as well. So there's a lot of change happening. I do think that creates hesitation among certain parties, but there's so much excitement around the space that I think people want to get in, and they're gonna find a way to do it.
Well, do you have any outlook? I mean, so you're seeing trends, not only what's happening right now, but you're seeing the trends over time. Do you see, when you study data from the past for as long as you all have been collecting, is there something cyclical where you're like, at a certain time period, the development should be coming back? Or is it just more about the factors we've already been talking about, and it's not really a cyclical thing? It's these things are going to have to happen before this happens, and we may stay flat for a long time on development.
I would say the demographics are not really cyclical. It's more, that's a known thing. There will be 16 million new 80-year-olds in the next 15 years, a massive increase over the current population. And that the year-over-year growth rate is going to hover between 4 and 8%. For the next 10 to 15 years, give or take a few. So that's just for the 80 plus population, right? While we're seeing the younger demographic grow at a much slower rate as birth rates decline, how family size is shrinking a little bit. On the capital markets and things of that nature, that's definitely cyclical. I mean, we benefited in the 2010s from really low interest rates. We saw senior housing have a development boom. We really saw a lot of industries have development booms during that time because debt was so cheap, relatively speaking. And right now it's not. It's more modestly priced, I would say. I think everyone would love for interest rates to go back to zero. We'd have cap rate expansion. We'd have valuation expansion. We would have more activity going on. There'd be a massive amount of risk taking, which would be good. You know, again, take comes with risks. But I think overall that would be healthy for the space. Our asset class was one of the best performers in the 2010s compared to other assets like industrials, office, multifamily. We were a top performer according to some NCREIF data. In the current decade, you know, we're still up there amongst the best performers, and we're number two in terms of optimism behind data centers, which has the AI wave behind it. So I think that's pretty impressive. You know, you have this once in a lifetime kind of technology moment happening, and there's so much what if there. And then the next most exciting thing is demographics, which is a little bit, you know, simpler, but it is. I think there was a speaker at NIC a few years ago. It was like, demographics is destiny. Like, this is happening, right? Sure. People are coming to the space. One thing I would add on the development cycle and things of that nature is, with the baby boomer generation coming into our sector, they are wealthier than any demographic before them. on a inflation adjusted basis. So in our senior housing market outlook report that we put out last year, and we just did a webinar a few weeks ago called Closing the Gap. I would encourage people to go check out. We put some data out that shows what does a senior's income and net worth look like, the median, right? So the exact midpoint. So there's no skewing from the ultra wealthy in that number. We have the highest net worth of any generation from the past like 40 years. Incomes have been steadily increasing. And I think over the past like 10 or 15 years, net worth is up on a median basis, maybe 30 to 35%. And this is all inflation adjusted. Senior housing rent in that same time period is only up 7 or 8%. Again, inflation adjusted. So there's a massive not only is the donut getting bigger in terms, right? The donut being the senior population, and you have the top half of the donut being the wealthy and the bottom half of the donut potentially being like Medicare, Medicaid. They're getting reimbursement. They're getting government support. And you often hear like the middle is kind of the missing middle, the part that can't afford private pay and makes too much money for government subsidies. Well, we think the donut's getting bigger and the donut hole is shrinking on a relative basis, meaning in aggregate, that middle is going to get larger from an absolute basis, but relative to the size of the overall donut, there's more people are able to afford our product. Now that's based on a pretty big assumption called asset spend down, meaning if I get to a point where I need to move into assisted living or memory care, I will spend all of my assets. I'll sell my house, I'll use my equity, I'll use my retirement, and I'll pay that down. When you incorporate that into the analysis, it's overwhelmingly positive, the potential demand here. Now, that also brings with it some risk, because a wealthier senior may not want to go to a community. They may look for alternatives. And I think that's another thing you mentioned with, you know, we don't know exactly what this next generation wants. We have some ideas. There's a lot of operators and investors out there running experiments in terms of new product types or prototypes. But care at home, care delivery mechanisms, those are also becoming more accessible. So we'll see. I mean, we've been around as an industry now for 30 plus years. There's a long, long road ahead for us to adapt, and I think we will.
Well, that's very positive. That's actually a really good note to probably wrap up this conversation. Kyle, I know you're here at FSLA. You're making presentation here, which is going to be great data for the Florida providers. It's been a minute since Lucas and I have been down here. What a great job they do. The energy is phenomenal in the expo today, meeting a lot of new providers, and it's exciting. What a great time in Florida.
Great time and a great conversation. To me, this podcast is the quintessential download on senior housing right now and what's going to be coming in the future. So share this with your friends and people that are interested. This is the quickest, fastest way to get up to date on what senior housing is and where it's going. Thanks, Kyle, for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to be here. I appreciate you guys as well.
And to our listeners that want to learn more, go to btgvoice.com, download this content and so much more. Make sure you reach out to Nick Mapp. They're one of our biggest supporters and helps bring this content freely to you. And you can connect with them in the show notes and on our website. Thanks for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas. Connect with the BTG Network team and use your voice to influence the industry by connecting with us at btgvoice.com.